From KQED Public Radio, this is the Capital Notes podcast for February 5th, 2010. I'm sticking with 2010, by the way.
Works.
Rather than 2010. Of course, by talking about it just then, apparently I'm not really convinced. I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio. Anthony York is the editor of Capital Weekly and the blogger extraordinaire for the Los Angeles Times. You should get a card that says that.
Extraordinaire.
Extraordinaire. And this week, you know, this is great. This is like a record where we're still not even talking about the budget, first of all.
I know.
And that's so refreshing. Although next week I've got a feeling we're back to budget.
But this apparently was crazy week in California
this
politics.
This was fun. Was this, I mean, you know, we're going to get into what all of this stuff is. But, you know, if you are a political junkie and you at least like politics somewhat by listening to this podcast, let's admit it. If you like California politics... This was a lot of fun.
Well, I think that, you know, those of us who've been covering the budget for so long, we've stepped out of our rubber-walled room, our rubber-walled cell, and into the Twilight Zone. I mean, this was... Wow, Myers,
nice.
Sound effects.
That's, you know,
normally
you're normally
job.
The sound effect guy, but you're rubbing off on me a little
that's
bit.
That's good.
Yeah, this was a weird week, and it was all about, as I said to Anthony before we started, it's all about the wannabes. It's all about these people who are running for office or maybe want to run for office or are running. I mean, it's just, but it was in a weird sort of way. So let's dive right in. Starting off with a guy who will get a job if things go his way in the next couple of weeks. He doesn't have to wait for an election, except he just has to wait for the internal politics of the Capitol. And that's an issue, is Abel Maldonado, the governor's choice to be lieutenant governor, his nominee, had his first hearing in the Capitol in the Senate Rules Committee. The Senate Rules Committee on Wednesday voted to send the nomination to the floor. So
unanimously.
Maldonado, yeah.
Well, four to nothing. Though.
Yeah, unanimously in that one person didn't vote. But
and who is that one person?
We'll get there.
Okay.
But just to set the stage, so Maldonado clears the first hurdle. He now has to go to a vote of the full Senate. And then, of course, there's the Assembly, which is the other issue. And the clock is ticking on this whole thing because depending on the number, but the real date, I think, is the 22nd of February,
the
right?
real date is the 22nd.
Yeah. That's the date by which the legislature either has to reject him or he automatically becomes lieutenant governor, according to the Constitution. Now, there are dates before that that Anthony was about to allude to. But
well, no. It has more to do with politics. No matter what, if Maldonado becomes lieutenant governor, they will have the ability to consolidate one of the elections, either the first election, which will be open. People can vote for a candidate of either party. If no candidate gets 50%, then the top two vote-getters in each party go to a runoff.
And there is some theory, too, that I've heard, and I think you're alluding to this, that I've heard from other people in the Capitol, which is that have a special election for the first election. Consolidate so that the June primary in that Senate district, if Maldonado gets the job, becomes the final election so that you have a new senator sat in June to help deal with the budget.
And also that would – well, that's what the Democrats want because a consolidated runoff where the seat will ultimately be decided would be a higher turnout and theoretically benefit Democrats. So if Democrats have any chance of taking that seat – and there's some debate over that
–
They need to consolidate the runoff. Now, in order to consolidate the runoff, they need to approve Maldonado by
the
16th. It appears to be the 16th.
Yeah, and so all of this is about Maldonado's seat on the Central Coast, his Senate seat. But getting back to the job of lieutenant governor, so he had his confirmation hearing, lasted a couple of hours. People who were looking for like angry personal fireworks, there were none.
It was
very much not that kind of debate, and yet it was a fascinating debate because it was all about the
subject.
I said we weren't going to talk about the budget,
right?
I mean, that was really what Democrats were doing, right?
Well, you know, Senate Leader Daryl Steinberg has been very clear that he wants to vote on this $6 billion so-called mid-year correction. He wants to take a whack at the budget, at solving part of the budget problem while Maldonado is still around. It now looks like that vote's going to happen sometime next week, talking to sources in the Senate and the Assembly. They're secretly crafting a package of proposals to come up on the floor. And astute listeners can go back to that Senate Rules Committee hearing, which is archived on the Cal Channel, calchannel.com. See, I don't even work there,
you're promoting
those.
Somebody else.
Yeah, that's okay. That's the
not
kind
that
of guy
you
I
want
am.
To sit through the whole 2-hour hearing like I did.
No. Well, but if you listen closely, I mean, the questions from Senator Steinberg to Maldonado were very clearly aimed at getting him on the record for what appears to be the things that will be up before the Senate next week. One of them, I think the big one, is going to be the acceleration of withholding for independent contractors, something the governor
you could call it acceleration. I think maybe what I would call it, though, is just an imposition of a 3% withholding on independent contractors, because currently independent contractors don't have to withhold their taxes in advance. They just pay later. And there's some theory that a lot of people don't end up paying, that the system doesn't really catch a lot of folks.
Right. So maybe – so I'm mixing things. This is what's known inside the Capitol as a revenue accelerator, right? This is one of my favorite euphemisms.
Right. I wish I could accelerate my revenue more than
Right up there with Ficino, but we'll talk about that later. That's a tease.
We're getting to FCINO. I'm not going to say it the way Anthony said it. But, so, I mean, Steinberg has made it very clear – for a while. And he made it last year. He wanted it as well, and the governor said no. But he's made it very clear that that's his first thing out of the gate, is he wants to deal with assessing, you know, up front this 3% withholding on independent contractors, with the argument that this isn't a tax increase. This is money they owe anyway, and that so we're not increasing taxes. And interestingly enough, according to everybody I've talked to, you double-check my math here, that's not a two-thirds vote to get that out of the House, because that's not a tax increase.
No.
It's actually just a modification to tax law.
It's a change in the way you collect.
Yeah, which could be a simple majority. Now, you push it to the governor's desk, and if the governor vetoes it, I think the Democrats could then say, well, we tried.
Right.
And I do wonder, and this has come up to me as well, and I know we said we weren't getting to the budget, but bear with
us. Here we go.
But given that the legislature is under this 45-day clock – when the governor established by declaring a fiscal emergency under the Prop 58 constitutional amendment, and that they have to address the budget problem or address the problem or whatever the exact language is in that 45 days, they could argue, well, we addressed the problem. You didn't want it. So what? So we move on and wait for later in the year, more budget debates, other policy debates, yada, yada, yada. So but that's clearly one of them. And that maybe that won't be the only thing in the package. You're hearing more than that.
Well, perhaps. We wrote last week about it, and I think we talked about it on the podcast, a swap in the gas tax proposal.
Right.
That might be something that comes up next week. But I think this issue of addressing the current year crisis, number one, while Senator Maldonado is still a senator, that's important for political reasons to get a budget through, potentially.
If you need something for a two-thirds, because in that case you wouldn't, but right.
Right. Well, in that case you need the governor. It's interesting to see – you know, how all this stuff plays out and how it obviously is dominating the discussion over the lieutenant governor confirmation.
Well, you know, and the other thing that I noticed, I mean, I think you're right in that read that we were getting a telegraphing of what is to come in a lot of the budget stuff. I also thought, too, there was a fair amount of wanting Maldonado to have to address the challenges, and Democrats would argue inconsistencies in the Republican mantra of there's some services that are really important, but we don't want to raise taxes. Because there was a tremendous amount, I thought, of, you know, Steinberg knew and every Democrat knew that Maldonado's first thing he was going to say was, only in America could my story become true.
In America a lot.
Yeah, because if you don't know the Abel Maldonado story, by now you probably do, because he says it a lot. And it doesn't diminish the power of it, but he does say it a lot. The story is his father came to the U.S. from Mexico in 1964 to work in the Bracero program, stayed, met Maldonado's mother, Abel Maldonado, born in Santa Maria. And some people have there was some angry vitriol out on the internet about he was an illegal immigrant. Well, he was born in Santa Maria in 1967, so he's not. But anyway. And so Maldonado uses this rags to riches coming to America story as, you know, only in America could I now, you know, be sitting here poised to be lieutenant governor. And the Democrats, you know, knew that was coming. And like a skillful attorney, which Daryl Steinberg is, said, well, how do you ensure that other people get to live the experience you did when we cut education, when we cut social services, when we do all these things because no one will raise a nickel of taxes? And it was trying to put Maldonado, I think, on the hot seat with that. And You know, and Maldonado, I mean, I don't know what his great answer is there. I don't really know how you get out of that pickle. But, I mean, he, you know, he talked about he didn't like cutting any education. He always vowed he never would. He voted for an education cut last year.
Was supported by the Teachers Association.
Yeah, but these were hard times, and he tried to wiggle his way through it. But, I mean, the Democrats were trying to make this larger point, I think, to all Republicans, to the public, to California, to the governor in a lot of ways, about where they will and where they won't go. Yep. In 2010.
Well, but the governor's already laid down, you know, laid down the gauntlet saying, hey, look, no new taxes. I mean, that now you can we'll have a debate over what that means. And if you lower one and raise another, or raise fees or whatever sort of hocus pocus they end up coming up with, maybe in February and also over the summer, whether that's really a tax increase or not. But in terms of the political lines that have been drawn for the to confine this debate, I mean that those at least are clear.
Yeah.
Before one other thing on the cash issue, I wanted to say is that you know a lot of Democrats that I've talked to this week aren't very they're not terribly concerned about the cash issue. I mean the controller
will the state run out of cash.
The controller was before the Assembly Budget Committee yesterday again saying that Wednesday, talking about how the state will run out of cash in April. Now, you know, Democrats that I'm talking to that I've talked to this week are saying, well, yeah, there's like a 3-week period that we need to bridge until the tax receipts really come in. April 15th is a big tax collection day as we get closer. So it's not like what we were dealing with a year or so ago when the state was really poised to run out of money. It's just a little temporary hole. In the budget. And so there's some debate over whether how large of a budget solution the legislature needs to take up next week. And I think that those discussions, at least as of this recording, are still ongoing.
Well, before we get to Maldonado's ultimate chances and kind of talk about where his chances lie as getting the job of lieutenant governor, let's quickly talk about the relationship between Maldonado and Schwarzenegger. Between how Maldonado sees the job of lieutenant governor. He's long said that he thinks ultimately they should run as a ticket, governor, lieutenant governor, like president and vice president do. And other people have said that in California. He's not the only one who says that. But he was, you know, he got into a discussion that I wanted to play a cut here. He got into a discussion about how lieutenant governors react in public when they disagree with a governor. Anyway, let's play the clip about how Maldonado sees the job. And then we can come back and quickly talk about why that might mean something here. But here's the clip.
I will not spend 1 minute of my day beating up on a governor of California, no matter what party they're from. Because every day that I beat up on a governor, I'm beating up on the people of California.
What if you disagree with them?
When I disagree with the governor, I will go to his office and say, I think you're wrong, or I think this is what we ought to be doing. But I'm not going to go out there and beat up on a governor. Because for a governor of California to go out there and say, we're going to do this and go back to Washington to work with federal government and say, you know what, we need resources, to have somebody back here say, no, we don't, I think it's unproductive. Can you imagine Joe Biden campaigning against health care reform?
So obviously that national reference of Biden and Obama, again, gets back to Maldonado's point that they should be a team. But there's going to be a lot of testing of, if Maldonado gets the job, a lot of testing, I think, of that teamwork. And the most prominent first issue on the agenda of that is this proposal for offshore oil drilling that the governor is pushing. And I don't know where Maldonado is going to fall on this, but for those of you to fill back in the hole of what that is, it's a proposal for a new drilling operation in state-controlled waters off northern Santa Barbara County, which is Maldonado's home.
Right.
Maldonado's from Santa Maria. This is about a 25-minute helicopter ride from Santa Maria, because I've done
it. We always travel by helicopter.
Well, you got to get offshore.
Wow.
You got to get off the coast.
Okay.
You could go on a boat.
You could.
Anyway.
Okay.
I went out and saw the platform. I know how long it took.
I'm getting in my helicopter. I've got to go do some grocery shopping.
From the airport. You know, I live the life of luxury as a public radio reporter.
Obviously.
But it's an operation that they would do there. It would bring the state money. The governor said last week, I think, and I alluded to it, you know, that it's budget driven for him, even though he has said he's opposed to offshore oil drilling before. Maldonado went to great lengths this week to try to squelch this idea that he would approve the project because the lieutenant governor sits on the State Lands Commission. That's where the project has to go.
He would be the swing vote.
And he would be the swing vote there. He went to great pains to this week to say he's not in support of the project.
As currently drafted.
Yeah, he had it both ways. He went through a long litany in an interview that I did with him earlier in the week in the conference call he did with the reporters and in the nomination, in the confirmation hearing. Went through this great litany of saying, I don't like all those offshore platforms on the coast. My grandpa says they don't build any more beaches. You got to protect it. Da-da-da-da-da-da. I don't like offshore drilling. And then in the confirmation hearing, seemed to leave a little squeaky door open there saying, I don't like it as it's currently drafted. I would look at it if somebody came back and assured that the benefits of the plan, and we don't need to go through the whole thing here, but environmentalists say there's a trade-off. We let them drill. They shut down the platforms early.
They removed two of the platform, two
removed,
of the four platforms.
They removed four platforms, ultimately. Yeah, well, they stopped on four. But the environmentalists say that's the trade-off that they've struck a deal with the company. A lot of people say it's not enforceable. Maldonado says, I don't think it's enforceable. So he seemed like he left some wiggle room if the deal could get tweaked, which we hear it might be getting
Make
tweaked.
Make it enforceable. Right.
Yeah, but this is one of those instances where Maldonado and Schwarzenegger, for now, disagree.
Well, we don't want to talk about that.
Well, we don't want to talk about that. But lieutenant governors are famous for disagreeing with governors.
Right. Well, what else
John
do they
Garamendi,
have to do?
Cruz Bustamante, Gray Davis when Pete Wilson was governor.
Mike Curb
when Jerry Brown was governor, right? Tried to, you know, be the governor because he was a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and so
somebody had to be.
I don't know. You know, the working relationship between Maldonado and Schwarzenegger or a Maldonado and another governor if he got the job outright in the fall. You know, I don't know. I mean, because as he was asked in that cut, well, what do you do if you disagree? I mean, you know, and if you like, if you're passionate about something, the governor's going the other way. You're not gonna, you know,
well,
it's interesting.
The massive bully pulpit. I mean, I know Californians are waiting with bated breath on every word that their lieutenant governor utters. I mean,
never has
know.
So much discussion existed about a job with so little responsibility.
Well, you know, and this was one of the things that occurred to me is what if they approve Maldonado and then zero out funding for the office? I mean, really, like budget say, you know, couldn't you see that happening?
He could work out of a coffee shop across the street.
Right. I mean, the governor is a little payback to John Garamendi, you know, slashed his budget by a couple $1 million a year or two ago. So it's not outside the realm of possibility. Who knows? You know, they're gonna look for pennies everywhere they can.
Well, let's talk about Maldonado's chances for getting the job. The sense that I'm getting from talk, let's compare our notes here of our talking to sources. The sense I'm getting is he gets through the Senate.
Yeah.
He gets through the Senate with the theory from Democrats that you talk to saying there really isn't a way we can reject his nomination. We come off looking horrible. We punish a guy who actually took some tough votes. We send a bad signal to the state about working together and getting along. You know, we look petty. And so, yeah, and we know him. And, you know, and it does. And I don't think Democrats in the Senate are convinced he can win the seat outright at election time.
Lieutenant governors.
Yeah, because, right. I mean, first he's got to get through a primary. And he faces Sam Onestad, who you referred to before, was on the Rules Committee but recused himself because he's running against Maldonado. Mm-hmm. And even then, he's got an R by his name, and he's got a win in a state that leans Democratic. So the
Could
Senate
be a Republican year, though.
Yeah, so you're hearing that too. More than likely he gets out of the Senate.
Yeah.
The question is, what happens with the Assembly?
And that's just it. The Assembly Democrats met earlier this week to discuss this very issue. And I've talked to a lot of people who were in that meeting or who staff people who were in that meeting. And I got some pretty mixed reactions. And again, remember, Maldonado needs 41 votes to be confirmed. There are reasons why certain Republicans won't vote for him, and there are reasons why certain Democrats won't vote for him. And so the question is, can he put together a coalition of 41 votes? Ultimately,
out of 80, right.
Out of 80, right. Are there 80? Yeah, everyone's back. Right. You know, ultimately, the decision is going to be that of the Speaker, Karen Bass. I mean, she has the power to decide whether or not to take up his nomination at all. And could probably, if she wanted to kill the nomination, probably has the power to do that. You know, the sense I get is that they might just bring it up and see what happens. You know, I don't get the sense that any Democrat is working really hard for his confirmation. My understanding of what the Democrats talked about, Assemblyman Chuck Calderon from Whittier was sort of leading the charge and making the case that the state Democratic Party was making about why they should not confirm Maldonado. That was from numerous sources who were in the meeting. And, you know, in terms of what actually happens, if I had to put money down, I say one way or another he gets confirmed. But who knows? Should be an interesting week next week.
Yeah.
Another weird week.
Yeah. And I mean, and we have to say, I mean, it's possible the assembly could just not take it up, in which case he becomes lieutenant governor and there are no fingerprints on it.
Right.
So, I mean, that's, you know, that's always a possibility.
But that would diminish Democrats' chances of, I mean, there are a lot of liberal Democrats who want him confirmed because they believe they can take that seat back in a special election. And if they allow him to become, for the reasons we discussed earlier, if they allow him to become lieutenant governor on the 22nd, that might hinder their chances for taking the seat back. This is where the politics comes in.
That's the whole six days that you want to move the election calendar down on the Central Coast. Depending on which one.
Right. Yeah.
All right, well, stay tuned on that one. That saga will continue, as will our next saga. Saga number two of the week.
This is a three-saga podcast,
and we're already a little heavy on time here. Right. But you'll just folks, come on, just crack open a beer, have a glass of wine, kick back.
Open up a YouTube browser window. And
yeah, we'll get to that one. Okay, so saga number two was the Republican race for governor. And the week began with a cryptic email news advisory from the Steve Poizner campaign saying Steve will make a major announcement Monday morning.
And admit it, you thought he was dropping out.
Well, there had been all this chatter.
Admit it, right?
And yeah, exactly.
Right.
There were one of two things I thought. He's dropping out or he's going to dump a lot of money into this race and buying TV ads, right. And here it goes.
That's what we all thought.
Right, here comes the campaign.
Major announcement. Those would qualify.
But they were being very cryptic about telling anyone what it was about. And, right. You know, and I just want to say as a moment for all of you who work in politics, there are only so many times you can get the press to show up without giving us any sense of what we're doing, because our editors want to know. I've got other assignments, and
we want to get it out before John Myers Twitters it.
Well, I don't have to broadcast it or tweet it yet. I just need to know how my day is going to go. So there are only so many times you can do this political campaign.
Get reporters to walk five blocks to actually go to the press conference.
When I had two other stories I was working on, so Poizner shows up and. It wasn't any of the stuff we thought. Poizner said that he was submitting documents to law enforcement authorities that he believed Meg Whitman's campaign had crossed the line legally in threatening him and trying to offer him, I guess, what amounts to a bribe. I mean, here's the crux of the whole thing. You've heard about it. Now, let me... I should read it in my best Mike Murphy voice, but I can't do that. So here's the email. Mike Murphy, who's used to be a Poizner advisor, used to be a Schwarzenegger advisor, known across the country as a Republican operative, is working for the Whitman campaign now. Murphy apparently last week sent an email to the Poizner campaign. I think it turns out to Poizner's pollster, as we found out later.
Right.
Is there anything we can do to get SP, Steve Poizner, to reconsider this race? The PPIC poll, you know, showed 30-point lead for Whitman. I hate the idea of us each spending $20 million beating on the other in the primary only to have a damaged nominee, and we can spend $40 million plus tearing up Steve if we must. Bad for him, bad for us, and a crazy waste to tear up a guy with a great future statewide potential, really the only guy on the California GOP bench for the future.
Obviously criminal.
Next paragraph, then I'll stop. We could unite entire party behind Steve right now to build a serious race against Diane F., Diane F. Is that Diane Feinstein?
Well, I don't know. It's spelled incorrectly because Diane has two N's.
Could be a strong GOP year and DiFi will be 78 or 79 years old. Ouch.
Ooh.
Thought I'd try one more time before it's 1914, which I guess
is World War I.
Right, World War I before we all go at each other.
Right.
That's the email. That's what Poizner said.
And out came Archduke Ferdinand and held his press conference.
Exactly. So
shot himself in the foot.
So Poizner said, this is not just politics. This is more than that. Here's what Poizner said in the press conference.
This is not an attempt to be hardball and to be aggressive. This is an attempt to effectively manipulate the elections process, issuing these threats, you know, behind the scenes to get me not to run. Now, some people would take these threats very seriously. I take them very seriously, too. They're not going to impact my desire and my willingness to run for office and to make sure that voters have choices. You can't offer financial inducements to get out. You can't threaten people to get out. And there's a variety of laws that say you just can't manipulate the elections process that way. Voters need to have choices.
So Poizner is saying that the voters won't get a choice if Meg Whitman has her way.
obviously criminal activity.
Yeah, so
I mean, I'm no lawyer.
Okay, so let's just so this one went all over the internet, all over these circles. The Whitman people said that Poizner was crazy. I think Murphy released a statement that said, "I'm worried about his mental health."
Yeah.
The Whitman people said, "Look at this, he's hilarious." The Poizner people said, "No, I have a point." Everybody else has weighed in. Who wins this, Poizner or Whitman at the end of this week?
Short-term Whitman, long-term remains to be seen. And,
yeah.
And I'll tell you what I mean. I mean, short-term, I think the gut reaction from all of us who were either listening to the call, as I was, or walked the five blocks, intrepid reporter such as yourself, to be in the room, was, really? Are you serious?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that there was a certain amount. It was February 1st. I think some of us checked the calendar to make sure it wasn't April 1st.
Yeah.
I mean, it was.
I mean, I even asked Poizner in the press conference. I said, help me understand, because the layman's going to hear this and think this is just politics.
Right. This happens all the time.
Yeah.
Right. And so short term, I don't think this plays very well for Poizner. And I think some of the coverage this week bore that out. I mean, George Skelton had a column just Thursday, again, I mean, a couple days later, kind of savaging the whole notion. However, I do think that 3 months from now, we might look back at this day as the beginning of a narrative about Meg Whitman, somebody who is used to getting her way by throwing her money around, is an arrogant elitist who believes that she can buy an election. And I think that that's, I mean, the irony, of course, is Steve Poizner is the man who spent more of his own money on an assembly race than any candidate in California history. You know, he is used to throwing his wallet around. He's just run into a bigger wallet.
Now, here's what I find fascinating. I think I totally agree with your analysis. Spot on, Anthony.
Hey,
I'm with
wow.
you. Ditto.
Yeah.
But here's what I find fascinating. And a pretty good Republican source mentioned this to me this week, and I think it's a valid point, because this was a person who thought that Poizner's attempt was, you know,
wacky.
A miss, but not a total miss in the way that you're talking about, but said, why didn't Steve Poizner come out and say, look at this email, they're trying to buy the election, she's arrogant, it's dirty, you know, and then they're threatening dirty politics,
right.
Voters are tired of this. So I am the serious candidate, yada, yada, yada. In other words, you could have gotten
right.
the whole bounce of look at Mike Murphy's internal email without
right.
saying I'm going to file criminal charges.
And ask Jerry Brown to investigate.
Yeah.
I love that part. That's
exactly.
my favorite part.
But, I mean, you know, in other words, the fundamental premise of the political strategy made sense. But
right.
when you took it one step further, It undermined the entire thing.
And it gives Jerry Brown the opportunity to say, look at this ridiculous.
Look at these crazy people.
Look at these crazy millionaires over here
yeah.
fighting amongst themselves. I'm the serious candidate. Or, well, maybe someday he'll be a candidate.
He's got a month.
Okay. Good to know. I'll mark my calendar and hold my breath. But I don't know. I don't want to go into too much speculation, but I will just say this is not the first such story that we've heard about the Whitman campaign throwing their influence around. I mean, there's been speculation about other attempts to get candidates out of the governor's race.
Well, and I do feel like this campaign is about to move into a very different phase.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because
it started here.
Yeah, it has started. But also, I mean, we are now, the political press, what ones of us are left. Are starting to now have time to pay attention to the campaign. Whitman has been running the 35,000-foot strategy,
right.
which is play above the California press, above the California media, go on the Today Show, hawk her book, go on Fox, go on CNBC, put out videos, do this. You know, not really actually, you know, radio ads, cajillions
right.
of them. Not really engaging down as a candidate with events, with voters, with reporters, you know, explaining how she gets to X, Y, and Z on her issues.
There's a danger, definitely.
And I think that avenue is about to turn here, where people are going to start to ask more questions. How do you get to what you want to do? How do you get to all these different things?
Agreed. It's funny. The Whitman campaign is calling me. They must know.
They sense it. They've got
they
a bug
bugged.
In the studio.
Tell
her we'll call back.
Okay. We'll call back and we'll put her on the podcast, like a call-in show.
Exactly.
You were saying?
But what the point is, this is about to flip into that stuff. And Whitman is going to
right.
start getting a lot more scrutiny. And when we got the campaign finance data out this week that showed the largesse of where she
right.
is spending money. I mean, there was a pretty good analysis on Thursday by the veteran journos who run the CalBuzz website,
right.
they really dug down into it and talked about how much she spent on consultants and messaging and the brand of Meg Whitman. I mean, that is going to be at least part of the narrative that the press is going to want to talk about a little bit.
But another point, and we're going to talk about Carly Fiorina's weird week here in a minute.
It's on the way.
But I want to make this point while we're talking about Poizner, and this applies to Fiorina too, is that voters are just now beginning to engage in the governor's race. I mean, just starting, or maybe the press is beginning to engage and the voters are going to trail behind here in a couple of weeks.
I think it's the press. I mean, I think
the press is just
way.
Starting, but then, which means the voters will come even later. But that, so if you accept the premise that the governor's race is just starting, and this is sort of Steve Poizner's first step out of the gate, and it's a really weird kind of nasty, she's picking on me, angry little man strategy. I mean, I just don't think that's ultimately what wins elections. I mean, and, you know, Fiorina, we should probably talk about that soon. I mean, she had a video online.
Don't give it away.
Point being, it was another attack piece, and these are candidates that are not well known to voters. And the first thing that voters are going to see, the first impression voters are going to have of them,
is something weird. Is that what you're saying?
It's weird and negative.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go to the week's award winner for weird. Maybe it's the first Capital Notes podcast award for weird. No, I don't know, though, because the Poizner thing was pretty weird, too.
I want to know who played the wolf, but anyway.
Okay, so we're going to play a snippet of the ad. It doesn't do it justice, folks, because you got to see the video of this thing.
My Facebook page.
Anthony's Facebook photo now. I'll put the link up on the blog, and, you know, other people have got it a million places online, because it went viral, and I think that's what the Fiorina people wanted, but not necessarily in the way they wanted.
Retroviral.
And so as we play this little clip of audio, let's remember that acronyms usually are something that you can say, like AWOL, AWOL, SNAFU, which I'm not going to say what that one stands for, and the one famous in Republican circles, RINO, which means Republican in name only. Arnold gets criticized for not being Republican enough. The point here, I think, was to make Tom Campbell, the opponent in the Republican Senate race, not Republican enough. They coined a new acronym, FCINO, which stands for Fiscal Conservative in Name Only. I don't know how you say it.
I
think I know a way you could say it, but it's a family podcast.
No, but apparently the official pronunciation is Facino.
And not Facino?
Facino? I don't know. Okay, well,
anyway,
point well taken.
So here's a little bit of the clip of this 3-minute web ad about the wolf.
Cue ahead to 2:15.
Tom Campbell. Is he what he tells us? Or is he what he's become over the years? A FCINO, fiscal conservative in name only. A wolf in sheep's clothing. A man who literally helped put the state of California on the path to bankruptcy and higher taxes. Fiscal conservative.
Okay, so again, you have to see this thing to really appreciate
you,
it.
You really do.
But this guy in a wolf costume crawling around a pasture with sheep.
And red eyes. Like a Jawa or something.
I know they thought it would go viral and clever, but the first 24 hours of this, I do not think went the way they thought it would go, because it was a laughingstock.
I will say this, though, looking to the fall.
Would you disagree with that? The first 24 hours didn't go the way they thought it would go?
Yes. Okay. But I will say, in the Fiorina's campaign's defense, that in terms of addressing issues for the fall, I now have my Halloween costume. Thank you very much.
You know, and their point about Campbell, that, you know, and they clearly believe Campbell's the guy, and I think it also clearly shows that they know they've got to do something to bring Campbell down.
Right.
I mean, I don't want to say that the Fiorina campaign is worried. Because, I mean, this could just be strategy. But they clearly know that if they don't bring Campbell off of his high altar, I guess, with the sheep falling. But, you know, the sense that he's the serious, experienced candidate in the race, et cetera, then they're not going to have a shot at this. But it just doesn't seem like you want to draw attention this way. You don't want people lampooning the work you did as a campaign. You want the message to resonate. And that was the same thing with the Poizner thing.
Give him points for trying, though, right? I mean, on some level, whatever the political merits of the ad are, political ads can be pretty boring. And in this era, I mean, at least it shows some creativity. I'm not sure creativity is a good idea for a candidate politically. But as a consumer of political nonsense, which, you know, I consider myself.
Isn't that an oxymoron, political nonsense?
No, it's redundant. It's not an oxymoron at all. It's
fair enough.
You know, I got a kick out of it. I can tell you, my 8-year-old at home got a real big kick out of it, and she doesn't know who Tom Campbell or Carly Fiorina is.
It's funny. In the first 24 hours, a hashtag. If you don't know what hashtags are on Twitter, then boy, yes, where are you? But
you're not following John Myers on Twitter at twitter.com.
Or Anthony York at his two different Twitterings. Boy, the Whitman people just won't leave you alone, will they? They must have some big scoop for you, Anthony.
Micro scoop.
But anyway, there was a hashtag on Twitter. It's a way to categorize tweets of a certain topic called Demon Sheep. Because people just saw this and went nuts with this ad. So make of it what you will when you see it. But, you know, as Anthony said, he's got his Halloween costume all set.
Thank goodness. One less thing.
And we've gone really long here, so we really should cut it off there. But let's just – we can do a 60-second lightning round here. Anthony,
okay,
do you think we cannot possibly do that?
Yes.
Two other wannabes in the news this week, especially one, Jackie Speier,
right,
Congresswoman, ex-state lawmaker, who said after tipping around that she might run for attorney general, she's not going to run for attorney general.
Correct.
And Gavin Newsom, the mayor of San Francisco, who seemed a little coy in a newspaper interview about would he possibly get in the race for lieutenant governor.
Right.
I think the bottom line, you tell me, we have a month to go before you file for a lot of races. People are wondering, are the chairs set or not?
Things could change.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that's fair? Do you think anybody gets in those races?
Nope.
You think those races are all set?
Nope, but there's always Dianne Feinstein, don't forget.
But do you think the races are all set?
Do
you think there are any surprises in any big race that we're watching?
Big surprises. I mean, does Dean Flores dropping out of the lieutenant governor's race qualify as a big surprise? I mean, there could be some minor shuffling. I don't think any big 800-pound gorilla gets in.
No big names get in or something like that.
I don't think so, but that's a February 5th prediction.
Ah,
we'll see.
We'll see on February 12th.
Yes.
Okay, so for the Halloween wolf, Anthony York from Capital Weekly. I'm John Myers from KQED. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.